The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of sage, rosemary, thyme. Without no seams, no needlework, then she'll be a true love of mine. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Between the salt water and the sea strand, then she'll be a true lover. The lamb's horn, parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme, and sow it all o'er with one peppercorn. Then she'll be a true lover. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and thrash it all out with a bunch of heather. Then she'll be a true lover. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of
Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on the ParaX Radio Network. You've just been listening to Scarborough Fair by Dave the Bard, and it's an old English folk song that has elements of both Scarborough Fair and another song called The Elfin Lover. It's about all the nearly impossible tasks that a woman must achieve to become the lover of a man from Elfland, so it is in fact a love song. And that being said, love songs tie into the topic for tonight, which is love magic, which also happens to be the title of author Lilith Dorothy's new book, in which we'll, ouch, sorry, I got bit by the cat, which we'll be talking about tonight. Now, Lilith is a magical practitioner, a voodoo priestess with training in several traditions, including Celtic, Afro-Caribbean, and Native American spiritualities. She owns her own magical consulting business, Brahmin's Pantry, and is the editor, publisher of Ocean African Magical Quarterly. She's also the author of Voodoo and the Afro-Caribbean Paganism, the African American Ritual Cookbook. And I'm really sorry, but I have a cat who's attacking me now, and I'm trying to not pay attention to him. All right. So if anybody in the chat room has any questions for Lilith, and I know there's going to be some, don't be afraid to ask. Just send me a private message, and I'll pass them on to her. And with that being said, Lilith, welcome to Stirring the Cauldron.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Marla. This is great.
Yes, I think I need to do a love spell on this cat. Seriously.
Actually, I have a couple of pet spells in the thing. I was thinking I should tell people that there's spells for, like, you know, making a loving bond with your pets and healing your pets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because that's a really deep form of love as far as I'm concerned. So
it is. And, you know, I've got to say that this is a small book in size, but it's loaded with more than 250 love spells and potions. And it had to pretty much be loaded because there are so many aspects of love, which ties into what you just said, and for that matter, so many kinds of love. But you seem to have managed to cover most of them, if not all. So what prompted you to sit down and undertake such a daunting task?
Well, there were a lot of things. I mean, I was scratching my head a little bit about when I first, like, thought about writing it, because I wanted to have an aphrodisiac cookbook, and there are a lot of recipes in the book because, yes, you know, I love to cook, and, you know, my daughter works for a Michelin star chef, so, you know, that's, I like to eat as well, obviously. We had a great Thanksgiving, but, you know, for me, food has always been magic. I grew up, and that was one of the earliest forms of magic that I had. You know, I could go into the kitchen with my Nana and, you know, watch her pull out herbs and spices and perform this magic and really transform it into something loving and healing for her family. So, but nobody can buy a cookbook or sell a cookbook today unless they're, like, a big name. So the book evolved into just a book of spells. And, you know, it made sense, really, because I'm a magical person. But then, like I said, when I thought about it, you know, I constantly have always been, I guess, for lack of a better word, obsessed with love. You know, I've had a lot of interesting relationships. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whenever I would meet somebody at an event or a workshop or something, I'd talk to them about love magic, you know, if only for my personal benefit, but just for a wider, you know, knowledge as well, because a lot of people just love, you know.
Mm-hmm. They do. And, you know, I was really happy, you know, you talked about the recipes in the book. And some of them are really delicious sounding. And you say that food is one of the simplest spells that we can perform. And I guess a lot of people don't think about that, but it's very true. And we also know that some foods have aphrodisiac properties, as you said, in of themselves. Some foods can be used as sort of divinatory tools. And then also knowing the magical properties of herbs and spices is also a big plus. And really, in general, it's never a bad thing to incorporate magical practices into your cooking, is it?
No, I mean, we have to cook anyway, even in the simplest of ways, even if it's just like making an egg in the morning. But, you know, we can put basil in that for healing, or parsley, or other herbs that might help us, give us a little guidance and direction, and, you know, whatever we need for that day. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mentioned my love of food. I also have a love of plants. You know, I did a lot of schooling. I was telling somebody this the other day. I was in school a long time. And as part of my undergrad work, I did a minor in plant science. Nice. And so I did spend a lot of time, you know, studying herbs and plants, not just from, you know, the magical aspect of, okay, this is ruled by Venus and this does this, but also in a practical side, because I think that really sort of explains it on another level for us, you know. So if we know that, you know, okay, sweet woodruff will grow and people can make May wine out of it, well, it grows in this lush, beautiful white carpet all across, spreading like a ground cover all across wherever you put it, and it really is magical, and you can see that associated with the energy of Beltane or Beltinna, and that really, to me, you know, just again, like I said, gives you another level and knowledge that you can bring to your magic.
Exactly. And these spells and potions in the book come from many different traditions, don't they?
Yeah, I wanted to include a little bit of something for everybody. I mean, I think that a lot of us are eclectic witches, eclectic magicians, and we draw from a lot of different places, you know. And also, I think from a heritage perspective, I come from a lot of different cultures, not just from spiritual, but also from an ancestral makeup. And, you know, I'm going to put in something in there that's Celtic spells for my Scottish ancestors, and I'm going to put in stuff in there, you know, that has to do with my African ritual practices and other things like that. And I think that, you know, again, people can, not in a dilettante way, but in a serious way, and say, okay, I gravitate towards Native American spirituality. I gravitate towards these kinds of offerings. So maybe I'll use that kind of spell or that kind of ritual in order for me to get the love that I need right now.
And, you know, I'm making just a little bit of noise because I just had, I came home because, as I said, the cat was kind of rowdy today. And I got this stuff. It's like a bag, a paper bag, but it's laced with catnip.
Oh, cool.
And as I'm opening it, the thing on the bag says, catnip lover. Ties right into what we're talking about.
Yeah, catnip's a great thing for love, you know.
Synchronicity. Yeah, does it work on people?
Yeah, people definitely use catnip for love in spells, you know, in gri-gri bags or baths, or, you know, sprinkle a pinch on top of your candle or something. I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it was the best, but it is something that people do use as a go-to love herb.
Good. So it's not only the cats. And, you know, when you were talking earlier about pet spells, there was a note in chat from Cece who said, cat spells. Yes, please. Have you got a cat spell?
I think there are general animal spells and general animal blessings in there. So you could use it on a cat. There's a black cat bast oil. I know a lot of cat owners are also devotees of bast or connected with the energy of bast. So there's that in there. So there might be a couple more things too. I mean, there are over 260 in there. Sometimes I forget. I wish my brain was a computer, but that's my best recollection of cat spells at this moment.
Did you choose the number of spells, or was that kind of what was suggested?
Originally, they wanted me to do more, and I was thinking, well, I really thought that would have been redundant in a way, you know, because a lot of the spells that are in there are sort of customizable for whoever's performing it or whatever the situation is, you know?
Right.
So if I'm an Aries and my lover is a Taurus, then I'm going to choose specific herbs that would go into that. I didn't write, okay, here's the one for Taurus, here's the one for Aries. Ironically, I am doing that on the blog, but that's a whole different story.
You know, I had a very good question from someone earlier in the week who saw the banner and wondered what the difference was between love magic and sex magic. They kind of automatically thought they were interchangeable, and there are, you know, parts that are, but this is more the love part than the, well, no, there's erotics. Go ahead, explain it for me.
Yeah, okay. No, that's an interesting question. That's a really great question, and I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before. For me, and also for what I put in the book, obviously there's more love spells than there are sex spells. But love spells can do a lot of different things, and sex spells can do a lot of different things too, but in a different way. So the love spells that are in there are more for things like bonding or growing or, you know, becoming a union or fertility spells or things like that, whereas the sex spells are about using the sex element for raising a cone of power or using that as a transformative energy. And then there's sex spells that are just strictly like passionate sex spells, like you want to have more passionate sex with your lover. So that, I think, would be the difference. because it's more, there's a sex act, even if it goes on for 12 hours, like we always hope it does, it, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to it. Whereas love, you know, again, all relationships end in, you know, breakup or death, but hopefully we hope love goes on, you know, even into the afterlife, and we're bonded with our partner or our people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. And I just got a question from the chat room, and she says, I've always been taught that in magic, it's wrong to interfere with anyone's free will. Isn't that what you do when you practice love magic?
Oh, that's a great question. Because when I sat down to, no, it is. Because when I sat down to write it, I mean, these questions of, okay, where is somebody's will? If I'm influencing somebody's will, is that another form of, you know, for lack of a better term, psychic rape? And I would never want to facilitate that in any way. So most of the things that are in the book are for, like I said, specific spells for healing or specific spells for, you know, self-love. I mean, I don't advise anybody go out and, you know, do a spell to bind somebody to them. I love to tell a story about, I had an ex-fiance who was, he used to do jailhouse tattoos, and he said every name he ever put on a guy, he had to take off again. You know what I mean? So I think that we, and anybody who's a magical practitioner knows this, we think we know what we want in that moment. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, you know, I have customers come to me a month later, they haven't gotten what they want and they're ready to give up, you know, and well, how much did you really want it if you're ready to give up on it in a couple of weeks, you know? So I think that I wouldn't advise anybody do a specific binding type spell with any individual without the individual's permission, you know, ever.
And moreover, there are people, and you know this, that look at someone and immediately fall in love with them without knowing anything about them. You know, some guy is really good looking and boy, they want him. And so they go ahead and do that spell. And this guy turns out to either be a slob, a serial killer, or God knows what.
No, it's very true.
And then there you are, you know, could be very dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. So there's definitely spells in there for getting out of things, you know, obviously call the police if you need to call the police. But yeah, there are spells in there for, you know, just breaking some of those ties or connections you may have put out in good faith and not necessarily had returned in a positive way, you know. So I definitely think that's very true. You don't know what you're getting. I was doing a reading for somebody like just yesterday, and I was talking about how, you know, you don't know if the person, you know, puts the toilet paper on the roll the wrong way or like forgets to close the freezer door or, you know, those things that might be really hard to live with in the long run. You can love somebody, but then there are all those little things that also go along with it. So usually what I advise people is just to do something to bring the best, you know, possible partner to them or to improve their situation in the best way. You know, I don't necessarily think it's, you know, back to the interfering with somebody's will, but I don't think it's interfering with somebody's will if you do, you know, a candle for communication, you know, because you're wanting to that person to communicate with you and they've already agreed to be in a relationship with you on some level. So if you're just trying to make communication better or connection better, you know, I don't really think that's interfering with their will in any way that they've not agreed to on some level, you know?
Right. You just don't want to lasso them and reel them in and tie them up. That's pretty much,
Again, against their will, you know?
Against their will. Yeah, there are exceptions to that rule, very definitely.
Some people want to be tied and lassoed and will happily give up their hair and their underwear and all the rest of it, you know, as part of the process. I have a lovely story. I had a friend of mine, he's passed away now, but we were cleaning out his storage locker and we were supposed to get anything his parents weren't supposed to find. I'll let all the listeners figure out what that is, you know. Right. So we go in there and we found a treasure chest and we're like, oh, this is exciting. So we open it up and it's a whole bunch of women's panties, all different sizes. And I was like, I just love that they're all different sizes. I just thought that was beautiful. I was like, it was an equal opportunity, you know, pleaser. Yeah,
I know.
It's very funny.
It's kind of amazing because, you know, people that you know really well, you maybe don't know that well. And sometimes it's a very big shock to find out. And sometimes it's really amusing. So,
I love that story. I love that. That was definitely a funny moment. In an otherwise, dark situation, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, mother should not see that.
No.
So you begin in the book by saying that magic and eroticism are pretty much intertwined. Now, most everybody who's listening is familiar with love and eroticism, erotica, whatever, but some may not be familiar with magic. So what are some of the aspects that these two things share?
I think there's a level of transcendence that they share that anybody who's experienced love or passion on a serious level will be able to understand how you feel like you're transformed into a different person, a different place, a higher level on some way. And that's what magic does for us in a lot of different ways, too. So I think that combining the two of them together is really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I really like the very first chapter in the book. To me, it's the most important of all. It's about happiness and self-love spells. And I truly believe that you can't be happy with anybody until you're happy with yourself. So let's talk a little bit about that, because it doesn't apply just to love and relationships. I mean, being truly happy with yourself sure makes getting through life a whole lot easier, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. And I think, again, you're right. That is really the best place to start. And it was the hardest chapter to write, you know, because dealing with, you know, one's personal history or demons or situations, you know, is a hard thing, especially for us as magical people. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes we might be dealing with stuff, you know, past lives, or we might be empathic and we might be dealing with our partner's, you know, history and things like that. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, you know, and this is a busy world we live in, you know, like they say we're the composite of the seven people we spend the most time with. So, you know, we're dealing with work and we're dealing with home and families and children and all of these things, in addition to our, you know, primary love romantic relationships. So I think all of that needs to be in harmony in order for us to move forward into a romantic partnership.
Yeah, and also those of us who aren't in the best of moods or in the best place or something, there is an invisible wall that comes up and it won't let people in. And conversely, it may push people away because they can feel those vibes.
Of course. Of course. I mean, I think that's, you know, like attracts like. So if we're putting mm-hmm. that out there, even if it's, you know, fear or doubt or negativity or, you know, on some level, just, I don't know, unpleasantness associated with how we feel about ourselves and the world around us, then what's that going to attract to us? You know, it's going to attract people that want to be, you know, in a negative towards us. And that's not what we need.
No. And, you know, I think you don't have to be empathic. Like, haven't you ever just walked by somebody and didn't talk to them, didn't really look at them, but you felt like you needed to step aside, you know, just because of what they were putting out. And so that's why people are saying, well, you know, I don't know why I keep attracting the wrong people, or I don't know why, you know, people aren't coming my way because I'm open to it. But those are probably some of the reasons that people don't understand. You're kind of cutting your nose off to spite your face sometimes.
Yeah, that was one of my grandmother's favorite sayings. So, yes. Yes, I'm very familiar with cutting my nose off to spite my face. Yeah, no, I think that's very true. I think that is how we put ourselves out there and what happens. And, yeah, we can feel that. We can pick that up. I mean, I grew up around a lot of people that were very negative, you know, and argumentative. And I think, you know, when I watch myself and my siblings and their relationships, it's hard not to choose that as well because it's what's familiar. So I think we need to heal that in ourselves in order to be able to choose something different, something powerful, so we can just sort of break the cycle of that, you know. And self-love is where all of that starts on every level.
Yeah, I've heard so many people say, you know, I don't like to be by myself. I don't know what to do with myself when I'm alone. I just, you know, and it surprises me because maybe because I was an only child that helped. But I love the ability to amuse myself and be alone and be comfortable in my own skin. But there are just so many people, like, I can't go on a vacation because these two other couples can't go with us. Well, okay, there's two of you. Why do you need six other people? Well, we just, you know, it's better, you know, it's so much better to have all those people around you. And I'm thinking, may not be a good partnership that you're in if you need all those people. If you want them, that's one thing. But to need them is a whole nother thing. So,
No, yeah. I think we have to be our own perfect complement on some level, you know, in order to be able to accept someone else into our lives. You know, my priest, Lou Martinet, who wrote the Voodoo Tarot in conjunction with Sally Ann Glassman, he's got a piece in there where he talks about the lover's card in the tarot being the Marasa, which is basically a Dahomey deity, but we won't go into the history of it. But the Marasa are the sacred twins, and I like to call them the voodoo yin-yang because they're the sort of cosmic male and female forces in the universe. And he talks about the Marasa being associated with the lovers as one person having the courage to divide and be. So sort of, you know, you can allow this other energy into your life as a compliment when you realize you do have all those things for yourself. You don't need that other person on there to complete you. You are complete, and then you can add something on top of it, which actually, now that I'm saying it, sounds like a basic principle of magic when you think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to be okay with yourself in order to do magic. Otherwise, you're not going to be sensitive to what's happening around you. Okay, what's happening with my candle? What's happening with, you know, these herbs that I'm growing in my yard, or this bath that I've just made, you know, how is the incense burning? And then you have to be able to apply that to your situation in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I mean, part of the thing about that chapter was you have ways to start pampering and loving and caring. So I want to talk about happiness baths, because we all need to do that from time to time. It's a fairly simple thing, so and very, you know, very helpful. So what is a happiness bath, and what are the benefits of taking one?
Well, I wanted to come up with a happiness bath because I wanted to give somebody something really simple that they could do. I mean, I don't have a bathtub, so when I have to do it, I either do it at somebody else's house, or I get like a bucket and stand in it, because that's a big thing. We do a lot of baths. I'm a practitioner of La Regla Lacumi, which is more commonly known as Santeria, and they're all about the baths. So I wanted to include stuff in the baths. It's very heavily floral, you know, things that are just uplifting. You know, a lot of the spells that I have in here, again, it just doesn't work on a, you know, magical level. It also works on an aromatherapy level. So, you know, that bath is designed with things like gardenia and other uplifting florals in order to, I mean, there's proven aromatherapy aids to just make you feel better. So you can get in a better headspace just by inhaling it, even if you are, okay, angry person. I spend a lot of time with little kids, and there's a story about Happy Hippo and Angry Duck. So
I would rather have an angry duck than an angry hippo. That's that
true.
Makes good sense.
So, but if you're angry duck, and you know, he's always that way, you know, you can still inhale that, and that will just change your, you know, biochemistry and open you up to more of a relaxed, calm, pleasant atmosphere, and then you'll be able to welcome more happiness into your life, you know, little by little. You know, sometimes you don't need, I had a client once, and I have this formula in there, but he wanted some Lilith oil. And by the time we were done, he was ordering like 20 different candles and 5 bottles of oil.
Oh, geez.
Just in order to be able to have sex with his wife one time. So I'm like, dude, I don't know if this is the right thing to be doing. So, but, you know, sometimes, you know, you go to the doctor, he says you need one pill. Sometimes you go to the doctor, he says, okay, you need antibiotics for 2 weeks. You know, depending on what your situation is, you may need to layer more than one spell on top of things. And I think that's also the reason I had the self-love chapter at the beginning, because that's really your foundation that you need to be layering other spells and other magic on top of, because you need that strong foundation of self-love and completeness in order to move forward.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I have a tub, but I usually shower. But as I was reading about the happiness bath, I kind of realized that I'm taking happiness showers because of the scents that I'm using and for my mood. But I seem to be kind of this floral person, and I didn't even realize it. So I looked at all the bottles of body wash. I've got jasmine. I've got patchouli. I've got orange blossom and gardenia. I mean, I looked at her, I said, I don't have anything that isn't floral.
That's kind of good.
I mean, the florals are kind of the lighthearted. Well, patchouli's not lighthearted. I love patchouli. That's my favorite. But it's a little fiery. So I think when I'm in one of those moods, I think that's when I grab for the patchouli, whether I know it or not. And the rest of the time, I'm like, oh, I smell like jasmine. Oh, gardenia. Yeah, whatever. But I think there are people that are flower people. There are people that are neutral people. You know, they just want soap.
Yes.
But I'm just lathering up with that. It makes me happy. And one of the key ingredients in the bath is Florida water. And you mentioned Florida water a few times throughout the book for various things. And it just seems like we're hearing a lot more about it lately than in the past, almost like a resurgent, although many of us have been using it forever. Can you explain what Florida water is to people who don't know, but have heard
of it? Of course. This question I love. And I always start with, no, it's not water from Florida.
Exactly.
Like, really? Okay. I'm beginning to think that I love the Murray and Landman brand. I'm beginning to think they should, you know, hook me up, man, because it's been the same since 1811.
Yeah.
My old Sicilian grandmother used to use it. It's a Peruvian tradition. Actually, they make a different formula for south of the equator and north of the equator. So we get, depending on the silver top or the gold top, is what you're going to get. I'm talking about this because you can make it yourself, but I have not had it be as effective. It's a blend of 16 different florals. They won't really release the exact recipe, which is probably why when you make it yourself, I haven't, and other people I know haven't found it to be as effective. Bergamot's in there. There's lemon. There's some other citrus things in there. Basically, they started using it, 1811. They saw that there was a need for sacred floor washes and baths and colognes, and they used I'm part of the Lukumi tradition. They used a lot of the Lukumi herbs and stuff that were in place in the religion in Cuba. And they made the formula as sort of like a substitute. So if you were on the road and you didn't have the 21 different florals you needed for the Orisha Oshun, who's the goddess of love and beauty and money and gold and lots of other wonderful things, then you could use Florida water because, you know, that was all you had. You tried, and unfortunately, that was all you had. And, you know, you can imagine in 1850 what was available. So you could use this. And it's really grown over the years, again, for people just adding it to their stuff. A lot of people grew up with it. I just love it. My sister wants me to get it for her for Yule, but it's a great all-purpose. If you've never used it before, energetically, I feel like it's a great all-purpose thing, like similar to a quartz crystal. You know what I mean? You can charge it up for a whole bunch of different uses. Normally, I mentioned in Lukumi, they do, you know, sweet baths and bitter baths. A sweet bath would be for bringing in, you know, positive energy, and a bitter bath would be for cleansing out negativity. So you can use it for both of those, but it does, because of all the florals, tend to be used more often in a sweet way.
And, you know, it was funny how I was introduced to it. It had nothing to do with the craft or anything else. A friend of mine, one summer when we were teenagers, she goes, you know, it's so hot, blah, blah, blah. She said, the best thing I do is I just splash Florida water all over myself and it cools me down. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And then, of course, when I got a little bit older and a little wiser and started doing a little more things, I realized, because first of all, in the beginning, I thought, well, she's talking about something else. You know, she's talking about a perfume or something. You know, she's not talking about something that I'm going to use in a spell. But it's one and the same across the board. Florida water is Florida water. It's easy to get a hold of. You know, you can consecrate it, you can bless it, you can do whatever you want with it, but it's right there. Anybody can get it anywhere. It's not like you got to run to Florida and you know, scoop out a swamp or something. But anyway, there were a lot of questions that came to mind when I was reading the book, which was very cool. It started to make me think, and so now I'm going to have to make you think a little bit.
Okay.
One of the things you've mentioned several times in the book is going to the crossroads to either complete a spell or some kind of an action. And I thought, well, what if people don't know where to find one or have no way to get to one? Is there an equivalent location that would work in a pinch? So then there goes my mind. Well, I thought maybe perhaps the person could be able to visualize one while working the spell, visualize being there. Or if something needed to be buried at the crossroads, as you're burying it, could you just visualize it being buried at the crossroads?
Is that the question?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. I mean, the basic simple question is, what if there isn't a crossroads around? What can you do instead? But
you can make a crossroads.
Okay. Tell us.
Yeah. That's what I would do. If it had to be buried, I would go out. And even if you couldn't go out, I would get a flower pot and put some dirt in it. And mm-hmm. I would draw a crossroads, an X, basically, mm-hmm. into the dirt. And then you have a crossroads.
That's just too easy. It took me 15 minutes to come up with my solutions. and then I wasn't sure I was getting anywhere close. But yeah, okay. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, a lot of... I'm a city girl. I'm in Brooklyn. I'm sure we'll have some sirens by in a minute so you all can hear that. But, you know, there's a lot of things we have to do in a city that, you know, other people who are out in the country don't get a chance to, you know, they don't have these problems. They have a crossroads or they have, you know, other things that we just don't have. You know, I had to come up with a piece of railroad track where I went to the store here and it was $180. So I sent away for it and I think it was $5. So that was much better. But, you know, there are things that, yeah, in a city are just very expensive or just not possible. So a lot of times when we have to bury things, I bury it in a flower pot or I bury it in a garden. I mean, obviously we have parks and things like that, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I think people may not understand about magic. It's kind of like the same thing as doing a recipe out of a cookbook. Some people think that they have to go verbatim. Every grain of salt has to be measured and every ingredient has to be exactly the same as the recipe you're reading. The creative person will say, well, you know, it might do better if I use this herb instead of that and a little bit more of this and a little less of that. And this is being creative. And the same thing in magic. You've just explained that you can create something that you don't have, or you can do things to make things work, and that's not going to screw up the spell. It's not going to ruin things. You're just kind of doing it your way. And I think people sometimes think that if they do something different, it's going to be wrong, and then it's just going to blow up in their face.
Well, it depends, you know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I definitely think that creativity is a huge part of magic. But we used to have a joke about, like, you know, I'm going to go do some magic. I'm going to turn water into fire. I'm going to put a pan of water on the stove, and then I'm going to go get drunk and forget about it. It's going to go on fire. So, like, uh-huh. That's not really magic.
No, that's stupidity. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I turned water into fire. But no, I think there's, and like even with cooking, you know what I mean? There's things you can substitute and things you can't substitute. I think that once you know the basic way things work, then yeah, sure, you can totally go off book and be creative about it. You know, but there are some things that, you know, like with the crossroads thing, like in my head, that has to be dirt. You know what I mean? It has to be a crossroads. It has to be an intersection. And if it's something that needs to be buried, then you have to have dirt. You know, I get a lot of clients that have, you know, I felt really bad for somebody the other day. They were disabled and they were telling me that someone else had advised them to do a mantra and then they lost their voice. Well, there's some things, you know, some words need to be spoken. If you don't have a voice, I'm kind of at a loss, you know, as to what needs to happen now. Right. So I think, you know, some people really are challenged in what they can do with their magic. But some people, it's something, like you said, as simple as just getting, you know, some dirt and even a bowl would probably even work, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even come close to thinking of that. All right.
No, but I mean, I think the visualization is really important, too. I mean, I think, and I kind of hoped I stressed that in the book, that as you're doing all of these things, you know, you really have to lose yourself in the magic. We started out talking about transcendence, and I think that part of a lot of the effectiveness of spells is in someone's ability to visualize themselves at the crossroads, even after they've left or before they've gotten there, so they can immerse themselves in the magical experience. Because you don't want to be thinking about, oh, did I pay the gas bill, or, you know, where did I put the key? You don't want to be thinking about that when you're, you know, in the zone for doing your magic, because that's only going to distract the positive outcome.
Yeah, there are times where multitasking isn't advisable.
Yeah.
But then some people are always saying that they have trouble focusing. They, you know, that I can't meditate because I can't focus. I can't clear my mind. And, you know, all these can'ts. But
that's where the creativity comes in, like you said. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't meditate in one way, because it's always been really hard for me to traditionally meditate.
Right.
But I've had a lot of success with mindfulness and even lately some yoga, even though it was hard at first for me to even have yoga because a lot of the teachers I was with was very touchy. And I'm not necessarily a touchy person every day. So, but I had a yoga instructor that said, you know, just raise your hand gently if you would rather not be touched during this, you know, yoga session, and it made all the difference in the world. So I think that there's more than one way to get things done, you know, and you can, if you can't go in the front door, maybe there's a window that's open somewhere for you, you know. Mm-hmm. For me, again, like I said, not traditional meditation has never really been that fantastic for me, but I can totally get off. I did a Haitian ancestor dance class 2 weeks ago. That was amazing.
So oh, wow.
That
cool.
definitely helped me clear my head. And when I'm doing, you know, 15 different dance moves I've never seen before with a, you know, Haitian dance master, I'm not really thinking about whether or not I paid the gas bill, let me tell you.
No, it's good to be where you are. There yeah. happens to be an interesting question in the chat room. From Cater, he says, what happens if you do a human love spell on an animal?
Oh, I got this in the book too, because I had a very good friend of mine, and she actually wrote the foreword for my other book, 55 Ways to Connect to Goddess. But she did a love spell where she had all the qualities she wanted in a man. You know, she was a widow, and so she loyal, faithful, handsome, devoted, and she got a German Shepherd. She forgot to put human in there. So she was very happy with her German Shepherd. So it happens. I think you need to specify human, though. I think you need to specify those things that you want, you know, if that's what you want. Yeah. I mean, and again, like maybe I'm not trying to be, you know, creepy or anything, but maybe that was the companion that she needed at the time. I've certainly had friends that I did readings for that thought they were heterosexual and then ended up finding a spouse and a partner and being homosexual and happy, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes we need to leave our minds open to different possibilities.
Yeah. And you really do need to be specific in spell work. I mean, all kinds of weird things happen if you're not.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, it's amazing. And people don't realize that, you know, you ask for one thing and people say, well, you're going to get what you have coming to you. You're going to get what, you know, the universe feels is right for you at this time. But if you're more specific, you're narrowing down, even if the universe or whoever is at the helm of making this happen, if you narrow it down, they will probably go by the rules that you set. And we do need to set rules sometimes.
Well, and I think that's another reason I put a lot of different spells in there, because it depends on who you're asking, too. I remember, you know, years ago, I would do spells where I would ask my ancestors to send me, and they would send me the same kind of people they would have sent me when they were alive. It was like people my grandparents picked out, people that went to their school. They were really annoying, like they were, you know, strange. I'm like, no, I would never have picked this person for myself. I see what you're sending for me. I don't like this, you know. So again, I think you need to figure out who you're asking and what it is you're asking. I mean, yeah, you can ask the universe, but there's a lot of stuff in the universe, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you were also, there was what, I forgot what chapter it was in, but you were talking about astrally meeting people on the astral plane and how wonderful that can be. And I think, I don't know, people, some people think they can't do it. Some people think there's no such thing as that. Some people think, oh no, you don't ever want to leave your body because you'll get lost and you'll never be able to come back. talk about astral projection for a minute.
Oh, sure. That sounds great. I think all of that has to do with, again, Hollywood and bad myth and mythos and things attached to, you know, trance and possession and altered states and all of those things, because they're all connected. And for me, astral travel, I mean, it's just like a form of creative visualization. You were talking about, you know, imagining yourself at the crossroads. Well, if you've been to that crossroads, it's easier to go to that crossroads again. So if you're starting out in the beginning and you're trying to do it, try and go somewhere you've already been. Try and go in the next room, you know, to you, and then try and make something verifiable. You know what I mean? Like have something in the other room, or have somebody put something in the other room that you can't see. You know, I think for all my spirituality, I'm also a very practical person. So we need to test things out first. You know what I mean? So do something simple first. And I believe anybody is capable of doing astral travel, especially, you know, anybody who's capable of just visualizing being in a different place, then you're capable of the astral travel.
Somebody in chat said, how do you meet someone astrally?
Oh, that's a harder question. Okay. Here, I'll tell another story. My mother, the first time she was doing astral travel, she went, she started punching everybody in the face and everything. And I was like, what are you doing?
Oh, no.
She's just like, I was having a bad night. I was like, okay. No, that's not what you do. That's what I said to her. That's what I'll put out there. No, that's not it. If you're trying to meet a specific person, I mean, obviously it's better if you've already met them. You know, I mean, I could try and astral travel to Gary Oldman, but I've never really met him. So that might be a little bit more difficult. It would be easier with somebody you've already been with. Since it's a book about love magic, it's definitely easier with somebody you've been intimate with, not even necessarily sex, but if you've touched them or hugged them or something like that, then you have a physical connection that you can establish. And then I think, I don't know, the way it works for me is I sort of have the visualization of being with them and then recall the feeling of the actual physical connection of being with them and then sort of use my own personal magic to amplify that, if that makes sense. Now, your amplifier could be a crystal, it could be a candle, it could be, you know, whatever meditation you use to go into it. And that's how it works for me. Yeah, that's easier, obviously. Sometimes it happens automatically. You know, we see these things on television where somebody gets a feeling that something, you know, is happening to somebody, you know, all the way across the world or something that they have a connection to. So we have these connections to people, even people who aren't aware of it or who don't see themselves as spiritual people. Like, we know that this is possible. So since that's possible, it's possible for anybody, I believe, really. You know, and it's just like anything else, you know, you got to work at it. You got to, you know, maybe your strength, this isn't your strength. So you're going to have to work harder at it than some other form of things. But I had a wonderful witch. She's actually in my dedication, Morgana Davies, years ago, like 30 years ago. This isn't my first rodeo. she did a workshop and she was talking about how, okay, maybe you're only really good at the time I was really good at fertility magic. I'm still pretty good at it. But, you know, she was like, well, then you need to just do fertility of your bank account, fertility of other things. Like, so you can use your own strengths and apply that to another area. So maybe you're not really good at astral travel, but you're really good at divination or reading the cards or the pendulum. So then do a reading about what's going to help you do this. Is it going to be a crystal? Is it going to be a candle? Is it going to be calling the person 2 hours before and saying, okay, at 10 o'clock, we're going to meet on the astral and have this plan to do something? Because I think the more that you're in tune with the person you're trying to connect with, the better, you know.
Well, that answers a question that just came up in chat. It says, does the other person have to try on their end as well? So that kind of helps to know you can, like, set up a play date, for lack of a better term. And that might be a reason that it works better for some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, for me, it's certainly easier if they know or if they're aware of my energy ahead of time. It's kind of like whether or not someone's blocked you on social media. You know what I mean? If they blocked you, whatever message you send isn't going to get through. It's going to end up in some third level subfolder that they may never find. So, you know, if they know you and they know you're going to try and connect with them in that way, then yeah, that's something that would be better. But is it impossible to do if they don't know? No, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
This is magic, you know.
Yes, and everything goes in magic.
Yeah.
All right, so here's something else that people probably be scratching their heads about. In the Materia Magica chapter, it deals with herbs and botanicals, sacred water, sacred crystals. Very great reference. But also, there is an appendix after that that talks about psalms that are listed in the back of the book. And sometimes they're suggested in various spells that you have in the book in potion making. There are those, again, who may be scratching their heads wondering what psalms have to do with witchcraft.
Okay. The simple answer is that there's magic in the words. And there's magic in the saying of the words. So obviously somebody could use their own words instead of a psalm. If they're not jiving with the psalm, that's fine. Excuse me. But for a very long time, these have been very powerful words, and they've been used in hoodoo and folk magic to bring about very specific circumstances. So, like I say in the book, you know, if you read this particular psalm, then this will bring about this magical effect, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of them, you know, like one of my favorite ones is for sort of ridding yourself of, you know, obsession and mental disorders and things like that. So there's magic in the sitting down and saying those words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think some people think religion, witchcraft, oh my God, you know, oil and water, they don't mix. But, you know, there's so many different forms of, well, so many paths, so many traditions, and hoodoo, voodoo especially, it's very Christian in certain ways, calling upon the saints and things like that. So it's not as strange as some people might think to go and use the psalm, because as you said, words have power, and that's important.
Yeah, a very long time ago, I got into an argument with a Catholic priest. We were on an interfaith council, and he was mm-hmm. telling me, it was like right after, you know, Vatican II, and they had switched, you know, they were getting ready to switch over from the Latin. And I was saying, if people don't know what they're saying, how can it be important? But, you know, now that it's years later, I'm like, wow, that was a really stupid argument for me to have, because just the recitation of the words, just the recitation, and all magic has to do with sound. And, you know, again, so many different levels of experience, but sound is very powerful. Mm-hmm. So saying those sounds is very powerful. And I could give you another, and in a lot of instances I do give other incantations and things like that. But mm-hmm. for most yeah. pagan Wiccan traditions, the incantations are going to end up, and there's nothing wrong with Bewitched, but sounding like something out of Bewitched.
That's the fun of it, yeah.
It is the fun of it. But mm-hmm. then again, if you look at, oh, okay, here are these words that somebody said for 100 years in order to calm their mind, to make them feel more sane and more together and rid themselves of anxiety, then maybe there's some power in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, I think we should pass along just one little spell from the book. So I said, okay, how do I choose? I thought, well, I'm not going to choose. I'm going to do a little bibliomancy and see what happens.
Cool.
Yeah. So I closed my eyes. I randomly opened the book with both hands. And then whatever was found, it was decided that whatever was found under my left thumb was the one I'd share. So what comes up? But the Hot Pants Ginger spell, which Ooh. I think is great. Yeah. And it's a spell for those of you who will wonder what hot pants has to do with anything. It's a spell to invigorate the nether regions. And I thought that was, you know, just about the perfect one that I would probably end up with, you know. And I did. So here's the deal, guys. And it's really, I mean, you can listen to this on the podcast and get it again, but it's really, really easy. And then, and I'll have Lilith explain it when I give you what's going on here. You take 5 drops of sesame oil, a small piece of ginger root, and a piece of natural red fabric. And you place the oil on the root and wrap it tightly in the fabric and then place it in your pocket. Now you want to take it from there?
Sure. This is ginger. Obviously, ginger is a fiery herb. You know, in Chinese medicine, it's used to sort of heat up the body when there's cold or things like that. So we're working on the same principle that you're going to heat up, you know, your down below area in order to make it feel better. And by putting it in your pocket, you know, you're sticking it next to your root chakra. You're sticking it next to all your sexual parts and things like that. So that'll help invigorate the area. Red, obviously, is the color of passion. We always use natural fabric because, you know, this is obviously you don't want anything synthetic in your magic. So you're going to be using something like cotton or muslin or some other fabric like that. And it's just a very simple spell. And, you know, mm-hmm. but it again, you know, in my tradition of Haitian Vodou and also in Lukumi Santeria, there's a principle known as Ashe, which is the sacred life force of things. Again, if you're familiar with the concept of chi, this sort of universal mm-hmm. energy that permeates yeah. all things, that's what Ashe is. And mm-hmm. everything has an Ashe, and ginger has an Ashe for both love and passion. It's an herb that's used for both the goddess Orisha Oshun and also Shango, who's very fiery and passionate. So you've got these two lovers that are, you know, have this ha-cha-cha. You know, she's the dance and he's the drum. So they've got this mm-hmm. kind of wild, passionate ashe. So by using that herb and putting it on you, you have the ashe of that right there. So it's literally like you have their energy with you.
Mm-hmm. And this just proves how simple spells can be. You know, three ingredients, that's it. Wrap it up. I mean, there are spells, as you know, I mean, in my spell books, there's some that go on for a page maybe, but, sure. But basically I try in the books that I've done, try to make it things that people can easily get their hands on. And in your book, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, there may be things that people will have to look up and, but there's always, you know, the internet and find out what it is and thousands of places to buy these things. And it's just, you don't, and that's the other thing I say, you don't have to be a witch, for lack of a better term, to do a spell. I mean, it's just like saying a prayer. It's just like cooking food. It's, well, food is a spell. These things work for mortals. How's that for a term? as well as they do for any of us that are pagan. So books like this, some people think, well, I'm not a witch. I can't do it. Well, no, books like this are for everybody, and everybody can get something out of them, right?
Sure, of course. I mean, anybody can make chocolate dipped strawberries, you know, for love to share with their family or something. You know, there's some really simple things in there that you can do and mm-hmm. some really things that aren't outlandish or crazy. I mean, again, right. I think that's the fault of Hollywood and mass media thinking that we do crazy, insane things all the time. You know,
there are I'm really qualified things
all the time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's that line from Buffy about where she's got yak cheese in her bra? I'm like, wow, that's great. You know, like, no, we don't have to walk around with yak cheese in our bra all the time. It can be something that's really simple, you know, something that's really unobtrusive, that's not really freaky or bizarre, that can really bring about positive results, you know?
Mm-hmm. It can. So anybody, you know, this is one of those books. And again, it's not, you know, a big cumbersome book. It's a nice size, tiny book full of more than you'll probably ever need to know. But it's just a wonderful thing to have and to practice. And when all else fails, you know, if you're not pagan, if you're not a practitioner, try it, because you're not going to go to hell. You're not going to end up at the post office with, you know, numbers underneath you because you've all of a sudden turned into a weirdo. It's so hard for me sometimes to realize what people do think of us sometimes. All the stereotypes, the Hollywood stereotypes,
oh,
and all the stuff that's been for the last few hundred years, all the negativity that hasn't let up yet. It's a lot better than it was. I haven't seen any stakes in the neighborhood, but it's just one of those things where I think we're much closer to being into mainstream than we used to be. And I think people are less afraid of us and are more open to maybe picking up a book like this, a spell book or something, and learning and trying and doing. And it's always beneficial. You know, basically that's the bottom line. It's beneficial to everybody. First of all, we've got a comment, bring her back again. So you're invited back again.
Thank you.
In the short time we have left, I want you to give out your information so that people can find out more about you and your psychic services, ritual work, workshops, news and events, all that good stuff. And you also have a YouTube channel that people can subscribe to. So go for it.
All right. So you can find me on most social media channels, Pinterest. I want to get Insta famous. So you can find me on there, Twitter. It's Lilith Dorsey, LilithDorsey. So please connect with me on there. Also, like you said, I've got a YouTube channel. That's Lilith Dorsey. I have a blog, which is called Voodoo Universe, which is on Patheo. So if you Google that, you can find me. I'm doing a lot of stuff, and I'm really excited about this book, which is now available everywhere as of today. So this is our release day. Yay! Happy day.
I know. How's that for timing?
And my website is blackbridget.com, blackbridget.com. And you can find all information about my events and stuff like that there. And I do readings. You can find that in my Etsy store. So, yeah, I'm all over the place, people. Find me.
And what's Brahman's Pantry? I mentioned that way back in the introduction.
Yeah, that was my original psychic product line, which I still do. So if anybody wants any custom products or anything, just contact me and I'd be happy to make that up for you. Usually what I do, I will say that, is I usually ask people to do a reading first, and anybody who's, you know, been around, because, you know, everything is different. So Everybody might need something slightly different. Somebody might need an oil, somebody might need a bath, somebody might need, they just need a reading and some confidence. So that's where we start nowadays.
Mm-hmm. So there she is. Go after her, go find her, ask questions, use her services, get her stuff. I mean, and go get the book. Go get the book. Start with
yes,
that.
Yes, please. Yes, yes, yes.
Because it's a, you know, like I think I told her in the beginning when we were talking before the airtime, I was like smiling really happy when the publisher sent me this book. I went, yeah, okay, we got to do this. So, yeah, it's beneficial to everybody. And, yes, we will have you back. We'll think of something wonderful to talk about. And
okay.
this is what I love about my people. They always, they're not always, but I mean, when they like somebody, they want them back. And some people worry about, well, you know, I had that person on my show a while ago. These guys don't care because they like people so well. So yeah, we'll definitely do that. And
That's wonderful. I had a great time. It was delightful.
Thank you so much for joining me, and I want to thank everybody in the chat room for listening and all those who are listening on podcast now, because it could be, you know, tomorrow, the next day, 3 days from now. I love podcasting. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Good night.
Another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2014. Moonlight Hall by Kevin MacLeod. Licensed through Incompetech.com.